So we are also joined this afternoon by Yolanda Richardson, a Vice President for International Programs at the Campaign for Tobacco-Free Kids. Yolanda was also in Moscow last week as a participant in the WHO Global Forum on Addressing the Challenge of Non-Communicable Diseases and the First Ministerial Conference on Healthy Lifestyles and Non-Communicable Diseases. Yolanda, thanks so much for joining us.
Well, thank you. It's a pleasure to be here.
A lot happened last week in Moscow. A lot of exciting events took place, a lot of active dialogues. What do you see as the major outcomes coming out of the conference and global forum?
Well, it's interesting. I mean, I both serve on the U.S. delegation, but also really saw my role there as someone who is involved from a civil society perspective in the meetings. And I think civil society went into the meeting with some fairly concrete things that they wanted to see come out of this, among which was the question of just kind of making sure that there was real attention to non-communicable diseases and making sure that policymakers across the spectrum of government understood that. In many ways, because the nature of the meeting was with health ministers, we were all sort of talking to those of us who were already converted. So the question is really, how do we get this on the agenda of policymakers at the very highest levels of their national government, but also on the highest levels of the UN system, which also has resources, both technical and financial, to bring to the disease and to the fight to address it.
And yet, one of the things that civil society has been particularly effective at doing is encouraging that these kinds of global forums and meetings are more inclusive and truly representative of all of the stakeholders involved, both in the decision-making process, but are also affected by the decision. So as a representative with that view from civil society, do you feel that the meetings were inclusive?
Yes, I mean, I think the day there was quite a good conversation on the first day. There were approximately 300 participants from all sectors of civil society. So there was the private sector, the faith community, organizations that work on particular diseases that are chronic diseases, people who represent more risk factors, like my own organization that focuses on tobacco control. So a very, very diverse set of players who were in the room to sort of have the conversation. If you look at the consultative process, however, this was really the first sort of opportunity for NGOs to really participate. Now, there are a lot of ways that NGOs participate informally. Clearly, at the national level, they are in dialogue with their governments and making sure that their government's positions in these meetings are reflective of both not only the government but also the civil society. So real countries with fairly robust civil societies did that at the country level, and so all of those consultations and at the regional level had NGO voices and influences, but NGOs weren't really in those conversations. And the ministerial meeting that followed the global forum, I think a number of delegations included NGOs and our own government, the U.S. government. I was pleased to see that they had four private sector advisors who participated and attended, and I was one of those. So they got right there as a part of the delegation, those perspectives shared with them and integrated into the conversations and into the discussions that were going on there. There's yet one other opportunity for NGOs, which will be in June, to come together and once again sort of have their opinions reflected. So there have been multiple opportunities built into the process. It is, in fact, mostly governmental meetings, so that's understood. And I think NGOs have just gotten increasingly sophisticated about how to use these meetings and these opportunities to make sure that they really are reflective of the concerns that we have. And that's over, 20 years of doing this, dating back to the very early UN conferences. And so I think we've gotten fairly sophisticated about how we make sure our voices are heard.
And as you mentioned, your particular interest is, of course, in tobacco control. So could you comment on whether the meetings gave tobacco sufficient attention? And then beyond that, whether there are any other issues that you think merited greater attention?
Well, I think we felt fairly pleased about tobacco control coming out of the Moscow Declaration. In many ways, we are lucky in the field of tobacco control. We have a global treaty that frames a global response to tobacco control. So we have some advantages that maybe, other groups don't have. And one of the things as a community that we wanted to get out of this conversation was making sure that the commitments that government expressed under the treaty remained as firm and advanced, if possible. So the declaration actually reaffirms the Framework Convention on Tobacco Control, calls on governments to accelerate implementation on it, and calls on governments that have not yet ratified it to ratify it. So we think that was a very important improvement and advancement for our issues. The other thing that was an issue for us, and I think will continue to be a conversation as we struggle through what the role of the private sector will be in these conversations, and there's a whole, private sector is clearly is not monolithic, so there's a whole array of private sector actors that could see their interests expressed in this conversation, but our concern was making sure the tobacco industry is not a part of the player, is not at the table in these kind of global conversations. We've had international and global dialogues about this. It's represented in the Framework Convention that the tobacco industry cannot sit at the table in policymaking arenas, and so we wanted to make sure that that didn't get diluted as the role of other private sector actors were considered and discussed in terms of the framework. And lastly, I think the thing that was most heartening and encouraging for us is WHO's release of the Global Status Report, which is supposed to be a baseline of the non-communicable diseases, had the 10 best buys, and tobacco was represented quite substantially in there. 4 of the 10 best buys are included because they are fairly cost-effective. They're more policy in their orientation than they are programmatic. I feel that our community feels fairly strongly that we made some progress with respect to these meetings.
Great. And, of course, the big question today is what's going to happen in September at the UN high-level meeting. So quickly, what do you think we'll see come September?
Well, it's going to be up to all of us who care deeply about non-communicable diseases to continue the advocacy. That's sort of one of the messages I want to leave today. You asked me earlier sort of what the role of NGOs has been and how whether or not I thought that it had been an inclusive process. I think it will definitely need to continue. Groups will have to go back to their individual countries. They'll have to advocate that their countries take positions that are progressive from the perspective of the non-governmental community. And they'll have to be in those meetings and really make sure that the things that they want get integrated. So we have a fairly ambitious and important advocacy agenda that we're faced, and that's the role that NGOs should play and will play.
Listeners can learn more about this issue by watching the full webcast of today's event, the Post-Ministerial Conference, Outcomes and Next Steps. Thank you.
This is the CSIS Global Health Interview Series at www.smartglobalhealth.org.